it's that time. Sharona. Hey, everybody. It's Kyle Stuke, one of your hosts for Humming Fools. And I'm joined by my other host, the king of the hee-hoo-ha, Noah Bosley. What's up, Noah?
Not much.
Not a mucho, as they say in the homeland.
That is what they say.
For me, not
your homeland.
What is not much in French?
I would depend on the sentence. I would say pas beaucoup.
Pas beaucoup. Was that bad?
No.
You're laughing, so I feel like it wasn't good. Do it again.
It was really good, Kyle.
Thank you. And now give me a participation award. What was it?
Pas beaucoup.
Pas beaucoup.
Mm-hmm.
You're smiling less. So I feel like I kind of did better.
You're halfway there.
Yeah, we'll start another podcast where Noah teaches me French.
That's right.
That would be pretty entertaining. Humming Fools, thanks for tuning in for a discussion episode. Haven't had one in a little bit because we had our Christmas episode, which was a special, and then we had the
gap,
the 2018 in review.
And well, but yeah, there was a week where we didn't do anything.
That's
and then,
true.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit. So now you and I just get to chat about crap.
It's nice.
Ah, nice, nice. Noah, I know I kind of spun the webs. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm so tired.
No. Your analogy needs to be about a horse and a cart.
All of a sudden, I just got really sleepy. Okay. I'm a little red right now because I'm so embarrassed. But
drunk.
I was going to say, which... I think I've had some hard truths learned this week because I was complaining to one of my friends when he was at my house. I was like, I don't know why Beefeater London with their 750 milliliter bottles
right.
are now doing the tin can things. I was like, it seems kind of wasteful. I got all these tin cans. And he's like, well, how often do you buy them? And I was like once a week. And he was like, And I was like, is that bad? And he's like, it seems like a bit much. And so I was asking a coworker who I trusted today.
Right.
I was like, is it too much? He's like, I think it's a little bit too much. I'm like, I don't think it's because I have a problem. I just like the taste, which I feel like would be the defense of any alcoholic.
Right.
I just like the taste. I don't know what's wrong with you. Anyway,
I can stop anytime.
Yeah. I'm obviously like, I think we're obviously recording on a Friday.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's a hard. I'm so sleepy. Oh no, this is the worst one. Yeah,
why do we choose to record episodes when we're the most tired?
I don't know, but it's never a good time. I'm always just needing to go to bed or something.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get at is what the topic is, which I was going to try to hand off to you, but as I was doing that, I recognized that I'm the one who came up with it.
Right, so, and I've already forgotten. So.
Okay, so I'm going to do it. Oh, Lord. All right, so the topic for this week is quick strategies to elevate your work or get you started. Noah, we have some disclaimers or
sure,
I don't know. Was there another word that you used?
No, I mean, that's what I would call it.
All right. Well, will you go ahead and give one and then I'll finish us off with what this isn't and what it is?
Sure. Yeah. And the title, and I'm not sure exactly how we're going to word it online yet.
Yeah.
And that might be the full title, but we're going to try to make it as not clickbaity as possible because there are tons of blog lists and videos and stuff that you can find that'll say, give you quick tips for success in whatever you're doing, which is not what this is going to be.
Nope.
These aren't for commercial success. This is just for personal edification and kind of getting a higher quality of work. So if you follow these guidelines, which again, our personal opinion, and they work for us and are things that we appreciate, but might be different for you.
Yeah.
But hopefully if you follow what the advice that we give, then it'll help you feel satisfied with your work regardless and proud of it, regardless of the reception that it gets, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of a long-winded way of saying it, but.
I think you did just fine. Yeah, here in Ominous Media and Humming Fools, we don't approve of clickbaitation. It's one of the seven deadly sins.
That's right.
And serial clickbaiters are not welcome. Yeah. So, Noah's 100% right. This is Noah and I aren't like these super, again, successful, rich, whatever. So it'd be silly for us to be like, here are seven tips for success. Like it.
Right. And we were saying this before the podcast, like it always seems silly when someone does one of those lists and it's like, why aren't you doing that? Yeah, did that not like, work for you?
I feel like you'd have more subscribers if this actually worked.
Right.
So this is just, again, things to help you, you know, be proud of your work and, you know, your own thing. And it's also our personal opinion. This is a very kind of, I wouldn't say niche, but it's how we feel about stuff. And
yeah.
So, and yeah, it's, you may disagree with it. It's not for everyone. So hopefully it's helpful, or at least, you can kind of see where we're coming from.
Or yeah. Or it'll give you, some kind of format to start thinking about, okay, what are things that I appreciate in other people's works that I can apply to my own, essentially.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then again, if you're like, okay, wait, so what is the topic? What are we doing again? So there's kind of like two parts to it. So the title, which may or may not be, but what we're just going with right now is, again, the quick strategies to elevate your work and or get you started. So sometimes, regardless of what medium you're in, you can be just be staring at a blank piece of whatever. So mm-hmm. it can be paper, it can be a canvas, whatever, a dance floor. You're like, where do I dance?
How?
How and do when? I dance? Am I the black swan or the white swan? And so it's kind of nice to take the heavy lifting off if you just start with some basic steps, like, okay, well, I can do A, B, C, D, or E, and that will get me going, mm-hmm. and then I can figure out the rest later. And so that's kind of one part of it, is just trying to give you hopefully some helpful stuff that can help you with that. And then B, just to back that up, showing you how we see that in other pieces of art and why we particularly like it.
Yep.
So hopefully that's clear. Sorry if it's a little bit confusing. Again, we're fools, and that's why this isn't a clickbaity article, because we don't know what we're doing. Noah, you have two-ish thingamajigs, but they're very, like we were talking about earlier, they bleed in and out. So I have kind of like three clear ones, so I'm going to start, and mm-hmm. then you can do your next one after me, and then we'll just kind of
alternate, yep.
Yeah.
Or just whatever, yep.
All the things. Sorry you have to listen to mom and dad talk for a second, audience, but we want you to be included and feel like you're part of this family, and thus we're going to start doing allowance.
Yeah.
I remember my parents told me about like allowance. Like it really was like, I thought I was in trouble. Like got sat down. They're like, so Kyle, you know, like,
okay.
Because like we considered you part of the family. I was right. Like, oh no, am I going to have to do taxes? I've heard about these.
Pay rent?
Yeah. Yeah. Do I have to go to work now? So starting off with our list, our strategies to elevate your work and or get you started, I have honesty and or the personal touch. So to illustrate again this, I'm going to start with how I see it in other things. So for me, what really interests me in a work a lot of times and can kind of, you know, push it over from just like, oh, that looks cool, to I'm going to buy this, I'm going to read this, is if there's that raw human honesty in it. So, for example, John Bellion is pretty popular. I was talking to Noah about this earlier. You know, he's a popular musician. He's got, you know, poppy, you know, sound. He's on the radio. Mm-hmm. But for me, and while I like all that stuff, what really draws me back to him is a lot of his lyrics. They're honest. Yes. And I really like that. And this kind of plays into how this won't necessarily be for everyone, because the honesty can be a turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of his stuff, it's like, oh, I can't believe you told us that, mm-hmm. like, or that you would admit that. But again, that's what endears me to him, and that's what kind of, you know, puts it over the top. I'm going to give two more examples, and then we can kind of talk more about the philosophical ramifications of that as well. But there's a film also called, and it's based off a book, A Monster Calls. And while it wasn't one of my favorite movies in the world, there's a scene towards the end where the young boy reveals his truth to the monster. And the monster's kind of been like trying to get him to tell him what his truth is, and the boy won't say it. And it's obviously this deep, dark secret. And so it's a PG-13 film. It's kind of a family film, you know, it has darker elements. And when they revealed what the truth was, I was like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe that you said that. And it wasn't that it was just dark, but that it was so honest. It was a very real emotion. And again, it endeared me to the film. It made me go, oh, this author, this writer, this director, they're brave for doing this, because I think a lot of times we want to put our best foot forward.
Yeah.
And while it's understandable, it's not necessarily authentic. And so I really appreciated that the movie/book did that. And then the third, again, there's a comic, a very famous one, a graphic novel called Mouse. Is that it? Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah.
You lived closer to them than I did, Noah, so I just wanted to check. By Art Spiegelman, and it's about Art's experience talking to his dad about his dad's experience being a Holocaust survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting art style where the Jewish people are portrayed as mice, and then the Nazis, the Germans, are portrayed as cats.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting visual decision. But again, it'd be easy for Art to portray his father as this perfect person.
Yeah.
Because obviously what he went through was horrific. And so
he's
kind of the hero of these flashbacks as he learns about his father. But he shows that his father is also a person and also has his own prejudices against other people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, reading it, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you would show that side of your father. Like, how uncomfortable. But even while I had those thoughts reading it, they were, again, combated by, wow, like, how brave of him to do this, and like how hard that must be.
Well, and not only towards his father, but there was also moments where he writes and draws himself in the story as doing something that people might frown upon, or like reacting to something in the moment in a certain way that he regrets later, but he still puts that in there, even if it doesn't make him look good.
100%.
Yeah.
And so, again, using those examples to kind of like why I like that is because it's just, again, it's not the easy route. And I think for me, that's something I identify with. I really appreciate that. It's an interesting choice because I think a lot of stories, a lot of pieces of art want to be these fluffy, nice little bow ties, sellable products. And so when you put stuff in there that makes someone's brain go, ugh, like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be better, but it automatically makes me more interested in it.
Yes.
And so for myself, that's kind of why there's these two different parts of it. For myself, I find that helps me when creating because and it's not necessarily always an edge, but I go, this is what can make me different, is that I'm willing to go there. And so with, you know, the poetry book Cullicino, I was like, I'm going to be honest about like what it feels like or like these emotions. And so again, some people, it makes them uncomfortable, but there's a lot of, you know, celebration from others of being like, oh, like, thank you for saying that. Mm. Or like, I had no idea. And then the same for Gimme to the Waves, of just really kind of being honest about what it feels like to be a person. It helped me just going, oh, I'm going to like go really dark / like real with this.
Mm.
And so obviously there's like a whole narrative with characters, but it helps me when creating to kind of think like, okay, always go back to how do I feel? And maybe it sounds selfish, but it helps me because I kind of put everything through the filter of like, what is Kyle Stukes like philosophy on life?
Yeah.
What does Kyle Stukes' soul feel? And so not everyone loves honesty. Some people don't want to see it. And that's fair when they go to the movies. Maybe they're like, I don't want to see this really dark thing. I want to see a funny comedy.
Well, yeah. For a lot of people, it's an escape rather than a reflection.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And so that's why it's like, this does not mean that you will be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, while listening to this, go, oh, those things sound interesting, or I like that, or yes, like I like that you do that, maybe for yourself, whenever you're creating, that can then be helpful. Of going, okay, I don't really know what I want to paint, but maybe I want to do something that's like really raw and real. And that can be the basis then of like, okay, well, what's a deep emotion I felt? Or what was something really hard? Or like, what do I want to be brave and shed light on?
Yeah.
That then can get your brain, you know, thinking about stuff, whereas maybe before you would have just been stuck and stared at nothing. Mm-hmm. So that is my first example.
Very nice.
Any other thoughts about that, Noah, or do you want to take us to the next station?
No, and actually that – I think that transitions really well into my first one, which is authenticity.
Boom.
And that's kind of a buzzword in the creative world, but what I mean by that is specifically if it might not work in your favor at face value. So like Mouse, I think, was a perfect example. There's so many decisions that he makes creatively in that graphic novel that, you know, at the time was probably like, oh yeah, this is not going to work. This mm-hmm. is not going to sell. This is, you know, but he was just trying to be true to what had happened, to his emotions, to, you know, the importance of the message, all these things. And it worked out great. It's, you know, it's revered as one of the greatest graphic novels of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it would have that status if it hadn't hit those markers, you know?
Yeah.
Even though those things aren't necessarily, you know, guarantees for success in this case, that's what worked for it. I'm immediately drawn to something if I'm like consuming that piece of content, and then there's something that makes me think, oh, that's weird that they would have done that, because I don't feel like that's marketable, or that I don't feel like that. I feel like that would turn a lot of people away from it. And then immediately I assume that this person is brave and vulnerable, and that they're trying to show something that's true.
Yeah.
One example I had of that, which you gave a music example, and one of mine was that as well. The artist or the band Kaleo, who do the you call it the Logan song, "Way Down We Go."
I thought I called Johnny Cash's cover of "Hurt" the Logan song.
Well, you've called this one the Logan song as well. I don't know.
There's two Logan songs then. Way down, where you go?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I think both of them may have been used for...
Oh, no, they both were.
For trailers for mm-hmm. Logan. But anyway, yeah. This whole album that came out, it's their only album, I think, which is infuriating that someone can just make one album and it's like, well, we're going to use your songs for trailers and you're going to be commercially successful and... Also, you're really good looking and you can play any instrument and you sound great and all these.
Like, oh my gosh.
It's just yeah. like, oh, stop it.
I hate them.
That whole album is a fantastic blues rock album. And there's one song on it that is in Icelandic, which is where the band is from.
Okay.
And every other song is like super like... grassroots American, like, just it has that sound, you know, that nostalgic American blues rock sound.
Mm-hmm.
And they sneak that in there, the song in Icelandic. It's a gorgeous song. And I was like, huh, I did not expect that to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there is definitely a market for, there's like Sigur Rós and like all these other bands that sing in Icelandic or other, you know, whatever other language and are commercially successful. But with this, it's like, oh, this is a modern marketable band that decided to, on their record, put a song in a foreign language that's not the same style as their other songs,
mm-hmm.
just because they felt like, oh, well, this is where we're from. This is important to us. And like all these things. And I was like, immediately this made me love that song. And on top of that, it just happened to be a really good song.
Yeah.
And then I just got a lot of respect for that album and the band because of that. Anytime that happens immediately, I'll gravitate towards a piece of art that has that in it.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah.
Now it sounds stuck in my head. And I kind of want to watch Logan.
I think you would like the album. It has some very good.
I was going to say, when you said the band name, I was like, I don't know who that is.
Right.
And I can't list any other song besides that right. one. And I can't even sing that song. I can only do that those lyrics. So, yummy.
Yeah, like authenticity was my first one.
Well, and I don't want to then be a butthole and go backwards, but I forgot to kind of note with the honesty. But I think it like bleeds into authenticity.
Yeah, oh yeah, there's definitely a lot of overlap.
But kind of with honesty was like the personal touch. And so, mm-hmm. and specifically because they're kind of the same thing, but like just looking at your own life and then kind of having something come from that. And so, again, that's a vague – that can mean anything in art, so let me explain. The example I had, which is another graphic novel, which was Blankets by Craig Thompson. Mm-hmm. And I think that plays into the authenticity because it's a very unique view slash perspective that he gives of kind of, I don't know if it's Michigan, it's somewhere cold with all the snow and everything, but kind of showing this guy growing up in a very conservative family, conservative family, and then his first experience with like love and kind of the hardship of them being far away from each other but also not necessarily fully buying into their religious roots and, you know, the body wanting what it wants and the guilt and shame that maybe comes from their actions with what right. their family thinks and all that stuff. And so to tie it to your thing and my thing as well is it's a very, again, specific viewpoint to where maybe if you grew up in a more secular household or maybe you were in California or even across the country, like some of our international listeners, it would kind of be like, this doesn't necessarily, you know, remind me of my world, but it would, again, you would be drawn to it because it's so personal.
Yeah.
It's, you go, oh, this was made by someone who grew up here, who is telling their story. Mm-hmm. And so kind of like with, what was the band that you, what was their name?
Kaleo.
Like, yeah, it's kind of cool that they would be very proactive about putting a piece of music, a specific song that's like, this is like, who we are. So even while like the rest of the music is who we are too, we're going to, you know, not necessarily roll the dice. I don't think one song would like ruin their album, but they're going to take time to call attention to their roots. And so again, in kind of thinking about creating like you yourself as a person, I think Jessica Whalen would appreciate this.
Yeah.
Or this wholly unique thing. Mm-hmm. It's like this beautiful equation that's just walking around. And so it's not that like every single person necessarily has the most interesting backstory or whatever, but again, like you can look at yourself and go, oh, like what's that thing about me that only I can do? And so again, Noah, you always make fun of me, rightfully so, for me always being like, I want to tell this story. I have a new story idea. Like, you got to stop. But honestly, something I do want to do is I would love to do kind of a more lighthearted graphic novel of my years growing up as an MK. Like I was thinking about the jungle and I was picturing like you drawing my family and me as a kid. And I just was like, oh my gosh, like, cause that would be so, it would be really personal, but also very specific to like what that time was like kind of growing up as a kid. And you didn't really worry about anything and you're running around in the jungle. I was basically like a non-athletic version of Tarzan. It's pretty great. So anyway, again, they're kind of the same thing, but there's the honesty, there's the authenticity, and then there's that personal like oh, I can tell that this person lived that life. And even like some of the things that you mentioned on our 2018 Looking Back episode, that book, Educated, that's one too where I think like that woman lived a very specific and hard life, and that's kind of what maybe would draw someone and be like, oh, what a unique perspective. Only she could have written that. Whereas like, oh, I was a young white male in, you know, this popular city. Like, it's not that it's not valid, but it helps you stand out where it's like, that is only that person.
Yes.
So if you can do that for yourself with your own art, or at least use it as a starting point, I think that could be a good way to get the wheels turning if you feel stuck. And or if you want to maybe make something different and or better.
Yeah, and that's fascinating to me because it can like align exactly with this other thing that people seek or be the opposite of that. But relatability is something that I also seek in content. But you know, it might be the opposite of your authenticity, because I'm also looking for a unique experience.
Yeah.
I'm looking, oh, I want you to tell me your story. I don't want to see my story in yours necessarily.
Yeah.
But then for someone else who's experienced something similar, then it's like, oh my gosh, this is so true. This is like totally what happened. Or someone, you know, does a painting of an area of the world that no, like very few people live in.
Yeah.
But one other person sees it, they're like, oh, that's home. That mm-hmm. looks like home to me, you know, and that's special for that person for a whole different reason than it would be for someone else who's like, oh my gosh, I can escape into this, you know, like this is, I'm, my mind is being opened by other perspectives.
Yeah.
So that's super interesting to me, because I feel like relatability is kind of this thing that floats around all of our things that we look for,
mm-hmm.
because it'll go from one person to another, depending on what the content is and who's making it.
Yeah.
Which is something I never thought about until now.
But, boom. Look yeah. at us again. We're learning on the spot, baby. And that, I think again, proves the point that this list is just so subjective and potentially not helpful at all, because yeah, any given day it could be, I want something relatable, or no, I want a new perspective, or no, you know, like,
right.
I think everything has potential.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what works for you?
Like if you were to tell your MK story, I imagine there'd be a lot of stuff in there that I'd be like, oh, that's such an MK thing. Like yeah. I totally feel that. But at the same time, the setting is completely different from anything I know. And so there'd be a lot of new stuff. So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
And then like, you know, other people who totally are separate from that, I could see it being a disconnect to where yep. like, I don't really know why he acted that way. I don't really know why sure. his family would feel.
This doesn't make sense to me. Yeah, yeah.
But then at the same time, maybe someone else who still separated from it would go, this has no relation to me, but I find it fascinating.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you really don't know.
Well, and you brought up educated, and one of the big issues in the book is just growing up with abuse towards you and around you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many moments in the book where I was just like, well, just get out of there.
Yeah.
You know, that was my gut feeling was yeah. like, I would be gone by now, you know? And then I kept having to remind myself, like, I've never had this happen to me. Like,
yes.
And it's so typical of, you know, other stories that I've heard or read from other people who went through, you know, systematic abuse and growing up with it. It's all you know, and it's normal.
Yeah.
And that's your only, like, semi-solid ground is this family that you're in. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what's out there. You don't know how to get out of this. You don't know how to make it on your own and all yeah. these things. And so I was like, man, this was really good for me to go through, to read all of this, to just kind of gain that perspective and be like, oh, these are all the steps that lead towards this being such a hard thing to get out of.
Yeah.
Everything just adds up. And so anyway, yeah.
Well, and you know, I think this is a real life moment of what we're talking about, because you saying that makes me like you more, Noah, because I think that it would be easy to say, I didn't have the thought of, she should just get out of there. What's wrong with her? I think it'd be easy to be like, oh my gosh, I had the correct perspective the whole time. Uh-huh. Like, I think that's very easy to do. And so, just in me talking with you. And I know you mentioned that briefly last time as well, but I think, again, honesty makes me like stuff. So thank you for saying that and being transparent. But yeah, no, that is true. Like, that's the thing about perspectives, is that it's like you have to really sit with something else and then go, oh, like, this is so different. But I can, through sitting with it, I see how the person could behave this way.
Yeah.
To whereas maybe before I would just have judged that, you know, from a distance always. Yeah. So anyway, tasty stuff. Look at us. Oh my gosh. I think we're great. Kyle descends into vainness. This song is about me. Anyway, it's a reference to the song in case anyone didn't know. My second thought, again, these are all bleeding together, is the high concept, Noah.
Yes.
This has potential for being truly terrible, because you can't just have a high concept. And it gets made fun of a lot in Hollywood, of like, it's this meets this
right.
or whatever. But with that said, I have to be honest in saying that those things can get me excited. And I have, you know, put a lot of films in my IMDb watch list simply from reading a synopsis and going, okay. And again, this can be beyond film.
Yes.
A lot of times with like certain art installations, it's like, this is where I got the paint from, or like every single brush stroke I did blind, or I don't know. And that stuff can be obnoxious and it's self lends to parody in our things. But there's something cool about that. Like I remember Crystal Bridges, they had an installation where it's just a room and it's furniture. But every day the furniture, like there's all these wires and stuff, you know, put throughout the furniture, and it's pulling the furniture slowly throughout, I forget the time length. Mm. And then they have cameras and it's filming all of this. And then it speeds it up to where eventually you can watch it and you can see the room just kind of like explode because it knocks all the stuff over. And so in the process, you get to see what's happened so far, but you also see how the room is in the moment.
Yeah.
I don't know the significance or meaning of this,
right,
but it is a cool idea where someone's like, what if you watched a room slow? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so through kind of having that idea, you can starting there, you can then think of something kind of cool and creative.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it will work, but it's a fun way to workshop. And so again, giving.
Well, so explain the high concept for anyone that might not, because it's like for creative people, it's something that comes up a lot, but some other people might not know what that means.
I'll try. You may have to help me because I'm trying to, as soon as you start asking the question, I don't know how to explain the high concept.
We might like, you might have your own definition of it. And okay. That's kind of what I'm getting at is like the thing that you're looking for. No. Don't Google it.
I'm Googling it, right? Do it. Okay, fine. I won't look at it.
It doesn't matter what it actually means. It's whatever you're looking for.
Okay. I'm going to say what I think it is.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to look at the Google search. High concept. Okay. That's a good point, Noah. Thank you for leading me with strong hands. Basically, it's just it's giving whoever you're pitching to or talking to a scenario that is very unique and immediately grabs attention because of either the combination of elements or the unique starting point. And I'm trying to think of films that have had the high concept. Be like, what if they're like, okay, well, it's a movie where, you know, there's this world that exists underwater, but no one
Waterworld
speaks English. No, thank you. Actually, Waterworld's a great example. My example was terrible. I don't even know what I said because I'm exhausted. But yeah, Waterworld basically being like, what if there was no land and sand or dirt, anything was currency because it's valuable.
Right.
And so there, you have all these you have civilization still exists, but they're fighting for little pockets of land and or to get money. Like that's a high concept. It's like, whoa, it doesn't mean that it's a good movie, which people saw happen.
Sure.
I can't speak to it. I never saw it.
I didn't either.
It's Kevin Costner, right? Mm-hmm. He's a babe. I'll watch it. So anyway, how would you describe the high concept?
That's about what I had in mind. It's just kind of something that there's usually a bit of ambition in it.
Yeah.
Something that wouldn't be easy to do. And something that, it will grab your attention because of how ambitious or out there or different it is, essentially.
I think we did pretty good.
Yeah.
Can I read the Google?
You've been looking at it the whole time.
So no, I haven't, I swear. I looked at the screen, but I have terrible eyesight, so I couldn't see anything. It was just white.
I promise, Your Honor, I can't see a thing.
But I think we got it. I just like the conciseness of the definition.
Sure, yeah.
It says, a high concept is a type of artistic work that can be easily pitched with a succinctly stated premise. It can be contrasted with low concept, which is, we don't need to, care about
sure,
that.
Well, sure, yeah.
Anyway, so.
It's, yeah, like a snappy, yeah.
Just like, boom, like, yeah, it's pretty, it's like, I think it ties in well with the elevator pitch. It's just like, here's a quick thing, I'm in, I'm out.
And because you make it short, it has to be exciting and the few words that you use. And so it'll usually be something big and kind of grandiose, but yeah.
Yeah. And so I think, so with that, I'll give some quick examples and they themselves can be high concept slash these pitches, but there's this Russian film called The Road Movie. And basically it's just a collection of Russian dash cams because there's so many accidents or weird stuff that this filmmaker collected all of them and kind of was able to just have a funny narrative about Russian culture. Mm. So again, that's kind of like high concept. It's like, it's just dash cam footage.
Yeah.
Someone's like, oh, okay. Well then what did they capture? I recently watched this German film called Snowflake, and the high concept part of that is like, and I think this has been done before a lot, but is that the characters in the film find a screenplay that has all their dialogue written on it.
Mm.
And so then they're like freaked out because they're like, this says that we're going to die. and so then they're trying to find the author, and they're like, should we kill the author? Is he God? If we kill God, do we die?
That's so funny.
And so again, that sentence, like characters realize they're in a screenplay trying to figure out, that draws you in. You go, oh, that's really interesting.
Mm.
And then the last one, again, I always try to, for you audience, I always try to do different mediums. So if there's ever what I'm consistently missing or we're not talking about and you feel left out, please let us know. We'll try to do better. But there's this book called House of Leaves, which is a book. Sorry, I just said that. I'm so tired. and it's kind of a horror novel. And the high concept part of that is it is designed as a puzzle to incite madness. And so it's kind of like this meta book where unreliable narrator and there's like multiple levels and you can turn it certain ways and there's like see-through pages, I think. And it just people on Amazon and other review places like go like, it makes you feel crazy because it's so meta. You start to go, wait, like this is actually legitimately creepy. Is this really just a book? And so that's a high concept too of like, what if like you have like a, like you are a character in a horror novel finding that, you know, mythical evil book. So it doesn't mean that the stuff's going to be good, but that immediately can give you a good template, a good starting point of like, oh, what if A? I think what if is a great way to start making something.
That's what it is. And it kind of makes you stretch your mind and go beyond your maybe your comfort zone in terms of something that can realistically be done quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you just start to think of bigger ideas than what you might be used to.
Yeah. Mm. No, let's continue along because as the audience has heard, I am slowly losing my mind and my ability to speak English. What's your next thing?
My next one, again, like these are all going to overlap, but I think Kyle and I sort of seek very similar things.
Like each other.
Mm. in media in general, but my second one was uniqueness, and again, this is a kind of a buzzwordy thing. Everyone's like, "Well, yeah, I just want to be unique. I want to be authentic."
Shut up, Chad.
Chad, the creative, classic. Here's a high concept.
Hit me.
It's this jock in high school who's also a very talented artist.
Whoa!
But his art comes alive at the museum.
Okay. Oh, with Ben Stiller?
That's right.
Okay.
So uniqueness. And I put in my notes, most notably in a visual style as well as the topics that you choose to approach. But what I mean by that is I'll be drawn if I'm looking at a shelf of books.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's a novel. Okay. I constantly judge books by their cover. That's how I buy a book that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
If it has a good cover, I'll buy it. And then I find out if it's good or not. But if I like the way the book looks, then I'll like it sitting on my shelf. If it's a great, great book that has a horrible cover, I will do my absolute best to find an edition of that book that has a better cover than the one it comes with. Because I want it to look nice.
Mm-hmm.
So if a book has a unique cover, then my eye will be drawn to it and I'll kind of flip through it and be like, oh, this is good or this is not as good. But in my kind of area, graphic novels, I'll look for a style that I haven't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
In comics in general, if I see a comic that it's like so many times I've been at Barnes and Noble and I flip through a comic and I'm like, man, this is this artist for sure. And I'll flip back to the front and it's someone else. And I'm like, that looks way too close to this other artist. And now I'm upset. yes. Kyle knows there's one person that I was ranting about before the show, but I haven't actually read any of his books, if he has any. But if your art style is too close to someone who's already established and successful and all that stuff, then it's going to turn me off of it immediately.
Yeah.
Because clearly you must be talented to get to that level, especially if you're already published.
Yeah.
So why not just like put in the extra effort and build your own style? And it's frustrating for me because that's something I struggle with, is, you know, trying to develop my own style, and I'm not there yet. And so when I see someone who is clearly a good artist pick someone else's style and just run with it and have that work, it just feels like a shortcut that they didn't need to take. Or maybe that was one they needed to take for success and it worked out for them. Again, these aren't ideas for success because clearly I'm working in the opposite direction.
Yeah. But ideas of how to get poor.
Yeah, exactly. Hey guys, you want to hear how to get poor quick?
Send us money.
And so, yeah, a distinct visual style or idea for whatever topic you're approaching. And this plays into the high concept, where if your high concept that you pick is too close to something that already exists, people are going to be like, oh, yeah, it's like that thing.
Yeah, it's the worst thing to ever hear.
Yeah.
It's when you tell someone about something and they go, exactly. Oh, it's like this other thing. Like, no.
Right. and that's why I've always thought the worst blurb to have on a movie poster or a book or whatever is the classic, it's this meets this.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, no, it's its own thing. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I put a lot of work into this.
Yeah.
But if you have a unique topic, something that, especially if it's something I know nothing about, and you're doing it in a distinct visual style, then I'll be like, oh, this is something that seems interesting to me. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. Like, one thing that's pretty popular now on Instagram is embroidery. A lot of people are doing their own business with that and doing custom work and all that stuff. And it's just getting to be where it's pretty saturated. And so if anyone decides that they're going to go off the beaten path and pick their own style, then I'm going to pay more attention to that person.
Yeah.
Another one is like typography, like lettering and calligraphy and all that stuff. There are so many people doing that now. Photography as well. And so if you kind of develop your own style visually and your own style of storytelling, then I'm going to pay way more attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
There've been a lot of Instagram pages that I just took one glance at the top post, and if it looked exactly like the previous page that I looked at, I wasn't even gonna. And this sounds, I said this before the show as well, but like a lot of this sounds very elitist and purist and all that stuff, but that's not really what it is. It's just kind of your mind starts to get numb to certain things after you've seen them enough.
Like pain for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A number of bottles. And same thing with movies. Like every time that a certain type of movie becomes popular, eventually people are like, I just can't keep track. I've stopped paying attention.
Yeah.
That's when you know that it's gone too far in that direction. So clearly there's a reason those things work, and that's why those people keep choosing them until they don't work anymore. And that's perfectly fine. Like, if you're doing it as a business strategy, I totally understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like you would get as much personal gratification from that. As if you were to be like, well, oh, this is me. This is my style. This is something new that I've created. Not as many people are enjoying it as they are enjoying that other thing that looks like all the other things that are popular. But I can rest in the fact that, oh, I worked hard on this and this is my own. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really respect in other people and that is a thing I hope to attain one day for myself.
Yeah.
I'm sort of getting there, I think, but I'm still not sure. So that's something I seek and try to find and maybe gain inspiration from. I'm like, well, what's this person doing that's different? What can I do that's different from everything else?
Yeah.
Anyway,
no, that makes sense.
That was really long. You're going to have to do some editing, but
I don't think so. I don't have the energy to, so I'm going to just let it run, tired. Baby.
But yes, hopefully that helps you if you are at a point where you're kind of stuck creatively, kind of developing your own style of whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't think it sounds, you know, elitist or whatever, because I think, again, it's our opinion. So
sure,
some people may like that general style. And while you and I may go, oh, I've seen that a bajillion times, there is, like what you already said, something to say for the fact that it is popular. So there's something there that causes people to be drawn towards it. But yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like with the Instagram, like when I'm scrolling through like the photography stuff, I'm just like, everyone's using the same filters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that same look to where, that when I see that look, this is exaggeration. I feel nauseous. Like, not really. Right. It's just kind of like, blech. Like, this is so stylized that, to where if I just get some contrast, I immediately like that other thing.
Yeah.
That can be unfortunate for people who, are the, starters of, unique things. Then it just gets, copied or whatever.
Yeah.
But you kind of, I think, will know. Like, for me, I kind of struggle. I'm like, should I hate or do I hate or do I not like the person who can kind of mimic a style and get away with it in the sense of being successful? I kind of am a little jealous because I know for me, I'm like, I couldn't do it because it just wouldn't feel – and I'm not saying that makes me better than our person.
Right.
Because I think like from a business standpoint, if you can like kind of hop on a trend and be successful with it, like why not? Like capitalism, like you do what you want.
Yeah.
But for me, like I know that there's been a lot of times where I've had the thought I should do that thing. Like, but my way.
Yeah.
And then I start trying. I'm just like, ugh, like, I can't do it. Uh-huh. And so I think, like, again, because this is our opinion, listener, if what we're saying sounds yummy, then that could be, again, the point of this podcast / this episode, that could be something that helps you.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, going, like, well, how can I do the thing? How can I do these things? Because I get sick trying to be like other people, or I just can't feel it. Well, then it may sound obvious, go the opposite direction
right.
What's my style?
Yeah.
What's the kind of visual language that I'm going to do? And since we're on visual language, I think that's what is encouraging is that it is all over the place.
Yeah.
You can see some of the artwork that is so detailed and that's what makes it special. Mm-hmm. You can see other stuff that's special because it's minimalistic.
Mm-hmm.
Some things are black and white. Some things are in color. Like, just, you have to, figure it out for yourself. And I think that part of trying to find that can be a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
What am I good at drawing? What am I bad at drawing? You know, that sort of thing. So anyway, I reject you, Noah, saying that you went too long. I'm usually the one who talks too long. So I thought it was glorious. And it gave me a quick moment, honestly, to nap a little bit.
Yeah,
no, I'm just
I saw you dozing off.
I was very present. Any other thoughts from you? I know you were the one who started the topic.
But no, yeah.
I don't want to go away really quick if you have more.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And honestly, that's one of the hardest parts for any creative person, I feel like, is developing your own style. Whether it's, writing or photography or painting or whatever. Especially one that's happens to be popular at the time that you're doing it. It's nice when you get an early start on something before it catches on, but sometimes you don't really have that luxury or you don't discover that thing.
Mm-hmm.
until it's already popular, and then it's a lot harder to stand out. But that for me, that's always been one of the hardest hurdles to overcome is, what's my style? Should I mimic this person for a while and see if that works for me? Should I, because a lot of learning, specifically with drawing, is imitation at first, and then you move away from that. But yeah. I think that's the hard part, is the moving away. Because when you get to a certain level, you can copy pretty much anything. But then when you decide to make something yourself, it either looks exactly like that other person's stuff, or it doesn't look nearly as good as you would want it to, mm-hmm. Because you're not copying from something that's already good. So anyway, hopefully this is semi-relatable for some people. I don't really have a way or advice for getting out of that. Mm-hmm. But just know that you're not alone, I guess.
That's right. Right there with you, baby. To jump in the same pot as you, like I know that I still don't necessarily have my own either. Like there's times when I write a sentence or whatever, or, you know, maybe a poem or even just like an idea, I'll go like after I'll finish it, either if I come back to or just after like putting the last period, I'll be like, oh, I think I just copied Stephen King.
Yeah. I definitely read this somewhere else.
I think this is Stephen King. I'm on the same journey of trying to figure out what is, you know, Kyle Stuck's style. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't like you can't help but be on that path. So I think like we're talking about like, yeah, find your own style, but you don't have to be discouraged that you don't have it yet, that you're not gonna have it for a while, because there's no other path that you can take but move forward and mm-hmm. try to find it. So don't be discouraged every time that it's like, oh, well, this is a little similar. As long as you're trying and you're experimenting and you're learning and you're growing, like it's fine. And so for me, like, and that's shown me what I think are like the glimmers of my style. Mm. I don't really know how to peg my writing style, but I know like, oh, I think what makes me unique / what's going to make my stories unique is A, my worldview,
right.
B, my eclectic nature, because I really like tons of different things. Mm-hmm. And so they pop up in the work where I'm like, I like jamming different genres together. I like putting different, types of people, different cultures. Like I just... and so again, Give Me to the Waves is such an easy, like, what if there's a world where I can jam all these things together? And so I think that will like, it's kind of like slowly as you play and learn, you go, oh, like, I think that's something. And then you find something else, then you find something else. And so, to affirm what Noah is saying, and hopefully you, it is not easy to just know, like, this is who I am. Like, The Greatest Showman, this is me. It's a great song, but I don't know who me is.
Right.
When you're coming down. I think, is that a different song or is that This Is Me?
No, that's the one.
This is me. Cool. I'm so tired. I have no thoughts and I don't have my gin in front of me and I kind of want some. Noah. This is a great transition to my third point.
Yes.
And it's kind of funny because it might seem in contrast to what we're talking about. But I have copying / starting from a template as my third thing. Now, hear me out, listener. You're going, oh, Kyle, you lied to us. You hypocrite. You're all over the place. You're sleepy. You shouldn't have a microphone in front of you. Some of those points are valid, but let me continue. I don't think it's bad to start by looking at other things and kind of dissecting them and stealing from them in the sense of like pulling pieces out and going, I like this, I like this. I feel like art's kind of like a buffet. And that's what I mentioned with my eclectic nature is I find lots of different things interesting. And I think most people do. Like I wouldn't think I'm special in the sense of liking different things. It's not like someone's like, I only like piano music. I hate food. I hate people. Like no one's like that. So we all have different interests and stuff.
But,
I think kind of playing around with, and we've mentioned this before, but looking at the art you like, the people that you like, the stories you like, the visuals, that can help you know maybe where to move forward, or even like just from an exercise standpoint, go like, I like this thing, let me do my version. And then maybe from that can come an original project eventually. Mm-hmm. And so I won't stick on this too long because I know for both of us, it's a little weird kind of talking about Snafu when it's not really out there yet. And right. No one really knows what we're talking about. But just to give the example, Snafu, our comic that we're working on, started from me going, like wanting to do a kind of a bottle story with a lot of characters who are similar in their profession, and that being either like assassins, killers, or something. And so that stemmed from watching Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight and loving the idea of like, oh, there's like, you have these bounty hunters, soldiers, like just all these people stuck in a cabin. They're all kind of terrible. And then we see what happens. Along with that, you know, Agatha Christie stories, like always having the 10 little Indians, like all these people have a secret. They're isolated on this island. And then the final kind of like nail in the coffin that really sparked it was on The Blacklist. You can read other people's screenplays. And so I don't know if it's like a monthly award or whatever. I've kind of been disengaged for a while because I refuse to pay anymore because I am poor. Right. There is this cool idea for a screenplay where it's kind of like all these like werewolf hunters or something, or like kind of supernatural, like kind of Van Helsing-esque characters go to a castle for whatever reason. And then it turns out that the castle is like occupied by like all these like legendary monsters. And so then it's like these groups of people having to try to fight their way out. That's been done before in a lot of ways, but I was like, I like that idea. I would watch a movie like that, like a big budget, like team up film of a very specific group of people having to face a very, you know, specific enemy. So again, I'm trying to be quick. With Snafu, my original thought was like, oh, like I would like assassins each get hired, you know, for a job. They go to an island thinking that they're here to assassinate someone, and then it turns into like the greatest game situation where there's just this crazy dude who likes hunting people.
Right.
And so he's like, I'm gonna hunt the assassins because they're like they hunt other people, so it's even better than the greatest game. And so that's where I started, was basically copying classic shorts, like a classic short story, Quentin Tarantino, some random person on internet story, Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
All these elements were things I liked, and that's where I started. And you can kind of see how that's similar to Snafu, because Snafu takes place on an island, and it's all these different crime families. But it became something wholly unique.
Yeah.
But it started from me thinking about what I liked, copying other things. And when I say copy, I want to be clear. Like, we're not talking plagiarism here. We're talking a different kind of copying. I don't know how to describe it.
No, but. It's like the just taking inspiration from concepts and ideas and like plot points or characterizations. Yeah, I mean, just all sorts of things that it could be. But
yeah. And so, all to say, I think that is a good way to. And this doesn't go to the first point of elevating your work, doesn't really elevate your work to copy someone else. But as a starting point, look at the stuff you love, look at successful things, and then do it your own way or play around with it and find your own unique style and or voice through that. And there's nothing wrong with templates. Like, you know, every like program, note taker, anything comes with like templates to help give you a framework in case your mind is overwhelmed by possibilities. And then you can go from there. Like, you don't have to feel bad if your mind can't be doing all the work.
Yeah.
Like, give yourself the break. Like, everyone needs different tools. So don't feel bad if you need a template.
I agree.
Anything else with that, Noah?
No, I'm getting tired.
Fantastic. I won't go too much into this point just to contribute to that because I don't really have enough information. But again, Josh Finn, Flynn, oh boy, it is getting worse. I was going to say it's beginning, but it has already begun since the beginning.
Stop.
No, I can't. I wish I could. Josh Flynn, listener and friend. And composer of the show, we were talking about something similar, and he mentioned Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross kind of talking about how too many options can lead to paralysis. And so for them, how, and again, I'm going to butcher everything, but in the show notes, check the link in reference to this because you can listen to it yourself, them talking about it. Josh was kind enough to provide it. I didn't have time. I'm sorry I didn't listen to it, Josh. Anyway, but they kind of like limited themselves to specific instruments. So they're like, we can only use these ones, which I think they either, you know, picked out of a hat or had a friend say, like, what instrument do you like or what should I pick?
Was this for The Social Network?
I don't know. It could have been. Yeah. I didn't listen to the thing because I'm lazy. I
know that was the big one that they did together.
Okay.
The soundtrack for The Social Network.
Which is super tasty.
Yes, it's excellent. And then I think there's a new movie that either has come out recently or will come out soon that they're working on together.
Okay.
But anyway.
We'll have to look that up because even if I don't like the movie, I'm going to listen to that score.
Right.
But that can be a way, too, of, like, limiting yourself. Like, it's easy when you're trying to make something and you go, like, all the possibilities.
Yes.
So either through an exercise or a very practical necessity for your mind, if you need it, have some guardrails, you know, rein in those horses.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the reaction from you that I wanted. That's too bad. Anyway, it usually kills with you. there we go. I got something. So yeah, don't be afraid to start with a template. Don't be afraid to copy a little bit, and don't be afraid to limit yourself maybe so that you can then fly.
Yeah, I feel like that could be a whole separate thing, just limiting yourself. Because you could say, oh, this story has to take place in Central Africa. Where do we go from there?
Yeah.
Or I'm only going to paint stuff in Indonesia, or I'm only gonna paint like stories of homeless people, mm-hmm. or something. You know, like once you pick a topic, it becomes a lot easier to fan out from there and like kind of weave a story. But I think limiting yourself is a good piece of advice.
Yeah, and I haven't done this yet, but I've thought about it a lot, and I think it's been a good creative exercise of me going like, oh, what if like, again, us having too many things. It's like, what if we did like a comic that has no dialogue? Like it's purely visual, and you've seen that elsewhere, and it's really fun, and it's a challenge because then as soon as you limit yourself, then you have to go, okay, well, what kind of story lends itself to not having dialogue? I can't have a Quentin Tarantino-esque story because that's all based on dialogue.
Yeah,
so
what
kind of characters, what kind of environment lends itself to more visual? So is my character mute? Is that why? Or, you know, whatever. So I think it's a really fun way to, again, get a good starting point. And that kind of goes to the high concept too, where you could go to someone and say, hey, here's my comic book. There's no dialogue. It's all visuals.
Right.
It's been done before, but that's a high concept. Someone goes, oh, that's interesting. How did they do that?
Yeah.
Did they do it or does it suck?
Sure.
I don't know. Anyway, Noah, any last thoughts on any of that or whatever before we get out of here and go immediately thrust our faces into some pillows?
Not really.
Together?
I do feel energized kind of creatively just from talking about this stuff. It's like, yeah, this works, you know, like this is the stuff that's, and so far this is the stuff that's worked out for us, or at least has kept us going. And it's just nice to think about now, you know, it sort of makes your mind wander.
Yeah.
And want to come up with new stuff, which is also dangerous because then you can become too far stretched.
Yeah.
And have too many things on the burners going on. But it is fun to kind of get the creative juices flowing, as they say.
Yeah, they do to say that.
Yep.
Oh man. Well, Noah, I think as great and clear and concise and professional as I've been, I gotta end on a high note and get out of here before I embarrass myself by maybe slurring my words or not pronouncing words correctly. Or I had to really think hard about pronouncing.
That's pronouncing.
That was the the joke.
Oh.
Yeah. I was hoping you're gonna be there with me. Anyway, I got some juices left, baby. Listeners, yes.
Don't ever say that.
You said juices first. I'm sorry for the performance that you had to listen to tonight, but hopefully there was some tasty good stuff in there for you. Speaking of that, if you have your own strategies or starting points or whatever that you find helpful for yourself, or you think like, oh, it's so obvious they missed fill in the blank, please let us know. We have by no means peaked, and as we're talking about, like, still trying to figure out our own styles, this is very personal and subjective. So if there's stuff that you think that we should know about, or again, think we missed, please let us know. I would be interested to see what other people use if they have anything similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and thank you all who engage with us for doing that. It's very, we were talking about this earlier, Noah. It's just, it's fun, it's fulfilling, and it's encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah. We get a lot of affirmation from just receiving a message from someone, even if it's just to say, these are the things I like. And it's like, oh, great. We got someone to engage and give us like a piece of themselves and all that stuff. So it's really encouraging.
Yeah. And it was fun with the Jan episode. Like lots of people like Jan. And so right. It was fun just to see people go like, oh, you interviewed Jan? Yay, yeah. I love her. It's yeah. like again, that sort of stuff is fun. And again, a big part of why we do this is just celebrating people that we like. And again, providing content for other people. It's not like, necessarily Time Magazine is wanting to interview Jan, but there's a lot of people who Jan has impacted and is right. really awesome. And she's done a lot. And so to be able to give new information, that was one thing that we heard. It was like, oh, I've worked with Jan. I didn't know about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, thank you. It's like, yeah, like that wouldn't have been able to happen.
Right.
Not to pat ourselves on the back, but that's the point of the show is getting to do that for other people and mm-hmm. stuff. So
absolutely.
Anyway, Noah, you are a fantastic co-host, a fantastic friend, a wonderful artist, and a delicious baguette.